Hi everyone, I'm Nicole and you're listening to All Access Pass, a show brought to you by the Accessibility Collective at CITR 101.9 FM. We are broadcasting live from the traditional, ancestral, and unceded land of the Musqueam people. So today we're going to be talking about a pretty current event. We're going to be talking about Bill C-22, which is a new bill that is currently just finished going through its first reading in Ottawa. We are on Season 8, Episode 2 of All Access Pass, and we have a super special guest, Margot. Margot was recently in Ottawa advocating for Bill C-22. So, hi, Margot. Hi, Margot.
Hi, thanks for having me.
How are you doing today?
Doing well, how are you?
I'm great. So can you tell us just a little bit about yourself?
Sure, I'm an autistic activist advocate. I'm a small business owner. I sell mostly autistic and neurodiversity pride goods under the pseudonym Retrophilia. I'm also the Lower Mainland West Regional Director for a nonprofit called BC People First.
Cool. Yeah. So tell us a little bit more about your art and your business.
Sure. So I started with a BC Arts Council grant. I made my first item, which was the Neurodiversity Pride symbol. And now I have, I think, over 100 products, including lots of LGBTQIA2+ items, communication pins. So I am hard of hearing. I am visually impaired. Please be patient with me. So a lot of what I actually design and sell has a lot to do with disability, and it kind of plays right into my advocacy work. I also recently participated in the Vancouver Outsiders Art Festival, so I got to showcase some of my visual art.
Nice. Do you sell just from your own independent website?
So I have shopretrophiliac.com and retrophiliac.etsy.com, but I'm probably in around like 34 to 36 retail stores between the United States and Canada.
Whoa, so you're like live all around North America. That's really cool. Are you based out of Vancouver?
Yes.
Very cool. Could you tell us just a little bit about your involvement with Bill C-22 and kind of what it means to you?
Yeah, so Bill C-22 is the act to reduce poverty and to support financial security of persons with disability by establishing the Canada Disability Benefit and making a consequential amendment to the Income Tax Act, which is from the Parliament of Canada. So for me, it just means, you know, fighting for that additional income or that additional, you know, money, because many of us are really left out, and the cost of living, as we all know, is getting a lot more expensive, which means we need to kind of get with the times, and with inflation, we have to make sure people are supported.
Yeah. I kind of came across Bill C-22 from a global news article that actually, funnily enough, did not actually mention Bill C-22, but I read about MAID, which is an acronym for Medical Assistance from Dying, which is essentially government-assisted suicide, which was originally created as a compassionate argument for those suffering from chronic disabilities and pain. However, it didn't really account for the fact that within the disabled community, there is not a lot of financial support, and it creates this endless cycle of poverty, which kind of leads to assisted suicide kind of being the only foreseeable option out, which is not contributing to a great quality of life. And that's kind of where Bill C-22 came in. It's in hopes to reduce this feeling that your only way out of poverty and suffering is through MAID and offer a better alternative. Just some like quick stats right here. So currently disability support in BC is around $1,358.50, which is like not a lot of money if you live in Vancouver. You know, Vancouver rent is insane. And when you add up things like gas and hydro and food and rent, it's just not a livable wage. And yeah, that is definitely where Bill C-22 comes in. It was created in attempts to reduce this. So, do you know anything about MAID?
Yes, I do. And it's kind of hard for me to fathom that they expanded MAID instead of focusing on Bill C-22 before that. And for Bill C-22, as far as I know, it's not going to include anybody that is 65 or older, which is a very kind of insensitive gap if you think about it,
Bill
that some of
C-22
the
isn't going to
people.
include anyone 65 or older.
That's what I've heard.
Interesting, interesting.
They say working age only, but yet those people who are 65 or older are going to have access to MAID. And if you think about this, which is kind of just so hard for me to understand, why was it that the what was it? The money that was given out during COVID,
Yeah,
the
the
I
CERB,
forgot
it
what
was
it's
not
called.
CERB. It's like Canadian something something benefit. I don't know what the E and the R stand
That
for.
was,
It wasn't eligible
yeah,
for
that
those
was.
with disabilities.
But not only that, that was $2,000. So why do they think that disabled people can live off of what we're getting for PWD? It's less.
Yeah.
Like it kind of blows my mind the eligibility and ineligibility of CERB, and then we're thinking about PWD and we're thinking about that, and it's just like there are so many gaps that the government is just choosing to like not fill in, or they're taking a very long time to kind of resolve these problems.
There is definitely a really distinct disparity between, like, and I think there is a time and place for MAID, the medical assistance by dying. I think there is a time and place for that program. I don't think it should be discounted at all, but I think that to have it really be the only option for those with disabilities is absurd. It's not really preserving life or encouraging a great quality of life. It's kind of just discarding those with disabilities to the side and telling them that they don't mean much to the Canadian society. So I absolutely agree with you in the sense that why was MAID further developed and further thought of before Bill C-22 was? And you're absolutely right in the sense that CERB was something that was given so much more funding and time, and people with disabilities were not considered during COVID because they also were not eligible because they were not technically, quote unquote, some of them were not, quote unquote, working peoples. But they're still living on less.
Exactly. It just is ridiculous. And hopefully this bill will get pushed into being a reality. But there's obviously other factors to consider in terms of who is going to be eligible.
Yeah, I took a quick look at the Bill C-22, and it's pretty vague in terms of what it would actually entail and provide. It essentially just talks about providing more financial support, but there is quite a bit of emphasis on how to be eligible. There's like some, like the clauses are go, they go like A, B, C, D, and it goes all the way down to like Q or something like that. But actually entailing what Bill C-22 would do for disabled peoples is incredibly vague, which I think is not super helpful, just in the sense that the whole point of having Bill C-22 is providing more specific guidelines on how to provide financial support for those that are disabled.
Yeah. It's we're just kind of waiting for more information at this point, and it's just like how much longer are we gonna have to wait?
Bill C-22, one thing that did really stand out to me when I was reading about it on the government site was that it says that it's supposed to embody the spirit of nothing without us. What does that phrase mean within the disabled community?
So nothing about us without us basically means like don't have these conversations if we're not going to be included. So many different organizations and charities and stuff like that are never run by the people that they're serving. So it's been really important to see Carla Quattro, I hope I said her last name right, as somebody who is disabled, be the person kind of at the forefront fighting for this for us because she has a much better idea of what people require. So it's been really nice to see people connected to the cause really start to fight for it. But we just like it's kind of like for me being autistic and seeing other people who are not autistic co-opt our voice, and act like because they know an autistic person or they have an autistic child, that they can suddenly be the voice for autism while shutting out autistic people, which happens a lot.
Yeah, I agree. There's on one hand, advocating for these people, for these groups is important, but on the other hand, you don't really know what they need slash what they want. And that's where having these voices where they're personally fighting for what they need and want is so important. And I think it's really great that the spirit of Bill C-22 is nothing about us without us. I think that really does push for a marginalized voice that hasn't been spoken for by themselves before, if that embodies the spirit, I suppose. Yeah. Bill C-22 is, I looked on the website and it did say that it is supposed to be in accordance with the UN Convention of Rights of Persons with Disabilities. Bill C-22 would be attempting to reduce poverty and pay the Canada Disability Benefit, and the payment cannot be charged. Do you know too much? Do you know anything about the payment cannot be charged portion of that?
I am not totally sure. I'm don't really know what that exactly means. But we're again unsure of who's going to qualify. I do have that book with the UN. I have that little book and I was looking through it. And there are a lot of things that Bill C-22 doesn't seem to like take into account from that. So I hope that they like start to broaden or make it easier for people once we're ready to apply, but unfortunately, I do not know.
Yeah, I think that the whole gist of the payment cannot be charged thing is that it's not something that you can be taxed on, which I think is another important portion. Being taxed on a disability benefit, I personally think would be ridiculous, just currently given how little money you're given. Being further taxed on that would be a little insulting. But yeah, I just think that it's so curious how there are so many clauses about how to be eligible, but just not a lot of information about what it actually would do. Like, I don't see a whole lot of discussion on how to quantify how much money is what you need. And I also assume that, I mean, this is a federal discussion, but how much money you would need to live a livable life is very different from province to province. So this is just a baseline federal discussion, correct?
Yes, and also not only from province to province, but person to person. So I'm not exactly sure how they're going to figure that out, but hopefully they figure it out soon, because the deadline for this keeps getting pushed back.
The deadline to approve Bill C-22?
Yes, so we were hoping by 2023, and now we're hearing 2024.
Okay, I see. Yeah, that is another conversation that I think Bill C-22 needs to consider is different abilities require different financial sums, and how you quantify that and how you allocate those funds is a conversation that I feel like needs to include the person rather than just like be categorized as like, oh, you fit this box, you fit that box, et cetera, et cetera. Do you know why they keep pushing it back? Is it just like government mumbo jumbo?
I think that's what it is. I think it is the hoops that they have to jump through because currently they're looking for people to submit briefs by November 16th. So they're looking for personal accounts right now from individuals. And then I don't know how long that takes to review and all the other things that they have to do in order to push this and get this approved.
What would these personal reviews include? Could it just be from like really any person in Canada who is advocating for this bill?
That's what it looks like. It's actually on rcommons.ca, so it is the House of Commons that is looking for the briefs by that date. So it looks like anybody who has a personal story or is connected to this in some way or another is encouraged to submit that information for them to review.
I see. Interesting. It's interesting that they're kind of, I guess that really does, in some full circle way, really embody the whole nothing about us without us spirit, that they're taking personal accounts from, and like a more compassionate standpoint from people that are actually going to be most affected by Bill C-22. I feel like I've never heard of a large scale federal decision considering the compassionate responses from those that would be affected by it. This is definitely really new and like really awesome, honestly. I appreciate that they're opening the floor for those voices to really be heard and considered.
I agree because I feel like so many of these bills that get passed just kind of seem like legal jargon, like very disconnected from being something for the people, if that makes sense. And this kind of gives it a more human touch. A more relatable approach in terms of, okay, well, you're a Canadian citizen and you can, we want to hear from you. We want you to give us your information versus these things that kind of happen and we don't have a chance to really have our say.
Yeah, I genuinely cannot think of a single provincial, federal, municipal guideline slash bill that was passed where they opened the floor for people to talk about this. Like even we're situated in Vancouver. I genuinely can't, like the housing crisis in Vancouver is insane, and I can't think of them opening the floor to those who are actually most affected by it, which is lower to lower middle class income. So that is really cool.
Yeah, they actually do. Yearly, there's the provincial budget meeting, at least on the provincial level. And if you're part of an organization, as far as I know, you can go speak to some of our MLAs, which I have in the past 2 years, and I have addressed the housing crisis each time that I've gone.
I see. Okay, I didn't know that. That's really awesome though. It is so cool that they're doing it on a federal level. Like I feel like it often feels that when these federal decisions are made, you kind of feel alienated from the decision process. You feel like once you put it out there, it's out there and there's nothing you can do. But to know that you can still be fighting from the sidelines or just right behind the front line while it's happening is really encouraging. So, yeah, so really anyone who could be affected by this bill could submit something.
Yep, and it's pretty cool to see for sure that we are going to be part of the conversation.
All right. Well, that is definitely something that is going to be thought about. And I think that anyone who could potentially be affected by Bill C-22 should go take a look and consider writing something because I think it would make a world of difference. We are going to go to an ad break right now, but we will be back in just a little bit to chat a little bit more about your experience in Ottawa.
love being caffeinated? And do you hate that greedy, soulless international conglomerates are succeeding in the cutthroat world of coffee? Sounds like local coffee roasters Trek Coffee is for you. Trek Coffee is 100% indigenous and military veteran owned and operated. Let's keep small businesses thriving. Stop by Sunshine Convenience on 4th, the Super Value on Commercial, or grocery checkout in the Nest to pick up some Trek Coffee today.
It's alive. Megamall's debut EP, Escape from Lizard City, goes live on Friday, July 1st. Buy the cassette and lyric book on Bandcamp or stream wherever you listen to music. For the last 2.5 years, you could avoid everyone except yourself. Welcome to Lizard City. Oh, I see the
Welcome back. I'm Nicole, and you're listening to All Access Pass, brought to you by CITR 101.9 FM. Hi again, Margot.
Hi.
So that was just a little technical difficulty, just a wee bit of a hiccup, but I kind of appreciated the little music that we got to play. It felt very fitting for radio. So for this little bit, I kind of want to talk about your experience in Ottawa. So how did you get there? Did you go with a group of people?
So I went alone. It was my first truly solo trip. Figuring that out was a little bit challenging, a little bit harrowing, but I did it.
That's impressive. I'm so scared to travel alone. I think the farthest I've ever gone alone was Victoria. I've never flown alone. Taking the ferry by myself was spiritual. Very fun. I recommend it to anyone who needs a little Saturday activity. So did you go as a speaker, kind of just to speak like in person during the bill hearing?
So I had the opportunity to travel through some research opportunities that I do, and I had to pick a good time, and I saw that this was happening. So I reached out to the organization Disability Without Poverty, and I asked them if I could speak. I showed them my bio, let them know that I do a lot of public speaking as it stands, and it was actually a rally that was outside on Parliament Hill.
Whoa. So
it was really amazing. There were lots of politicians there, lots of people, lots of photos of me circulating at the rally, and yeah, it was amazing to be outside and speaking and feeling like I was adding something to the conversation.
So was this opportunity to travel with the research group specifically for Bill C-22?
It wasn't. I actually just had to pick a specific time within a time frame, and I actually saw Spencer of BC Disability, I think .ca or .com. He had posted an image of the rally coming up, and I saw the date, and I saw, oh my gosh, I don't have anything planned around those dates. This is what I need to do for my trip. So the stars kind of aligned, and I was able to write them and somehow get added to this list of speakers and go and do it.
My gosh. So there were a lot of other people that were kind of doing the same role as you in Ottawa.
Yeah, there were, I think, 3 or 4 other speakers, aside from the politicians that initially spoke, that were there speaking as well, sharing their different stories, and a bunch of different organizations were there. So Disability Without Poverty was there. There was Inclusion Canada was there as well, and a few other ones. But I was able to go and basically represent myself and BC People First.
Cool. So were there any other people from BC that were there?
There were a couple, actually, that I was able to meet and talk to briefly. So it was really cool to see that there were actually other people who had traveled to be there.
Did you speak in front of like a really big crowd of really official politicians?
So unfortunately, most of the politicians had left after they spoke. I think a few were still present to hear me speak, which was really amazing. I believe Benita Zarillo, who is NDP for Port Moody, Coquitlam. She was there, and I was actually able to meet her. And she said she had actually heard of my name before.
Whoa.
Which was really cool and really reaffirming.
How has she heard of you? Like, through your art?
I do a lot of activism and advocacy. I ran an event called We Belong Market for Disabled Artists, where we didn't charge anybody, August 27th, that we had a lot of publicity for. And I did email every single MLA in the Lower Mainland and Fraser Valley, probably. So I'm sure my name probably came across her desk.
Cool. So you went to Ottawa. You were with a bunch of other people that were filling the same role as you, speaking on behalf of your personal experience and how Bill C-22 would affect you for the better. Did you meet any really cool people with some really cool stories? Because I'm sure you did.
I honestly had a bunch of my Nothing About Us Without Us enamel pins to give out, the Disability Pride Flag enamel pins to give out, and Disabled Is Not a Bad Word keychains. So those were kind of like a really nice icebreaker to go up to people who I didn't know and offer them, you know, something that I do that meant a lot to them. So I met a lot of people through that kind of tangible icebreaker. And from there, I was able to also showcase, like, what I do and how I help to support myself. So, yeah, I met so many people, and it was just, like, it felt very comfortable because everybody was there with the same reason, which was fighting for not only themselves, but for their loved ones, family members, the disabled community at large.
You're such a go-getter. Oh, my gosh. I like to consider myself to be a pretty social person, but going all the way out to Ottawa, and like you flew out for the first time by yourself, really going all the way out to Ottawa and speaking about this like deeply personal cause, and then like promoting your own art and putting yourself out there as icebreakers is just like, that sounds like such a crazy adventure.
It was something new, and for me, you know, being autistic, it definitely required a lot of masking and a lot of like decompression once I got home.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was a whirlwind. I flew in, took a red eye. I was there for basically two whole days, and then I flew back the next morning. And it was my first time ever taking a lift before, so I didn't know what I was doing. Fortunately enough, that was a really nice, accessible way to get me from the airport to the hotel and vice versa without having to worry about it too much.
Nice. Yeah, that sounds like a lot of change all at once. I think I would have been way too stressed to, like, have done that all without, like, vigorous planning. And it kind of just sounds like it just happened for you. So that just sounds like such an awesome experience. And I'm really glad that that research group was able to fund you to go.
Yeah, it was amazing, honestly. Like, the fact that everything fell into place. I did do a lot of planning beforehand just because that's the kind of person I am. But it was all very short notice, and, you know, I wouldn't trade that experience for anything. I mean, I think I missed my cat a lot, but we've been spending a lot of quality time together since, so, you know, I think that was the worst part of it for me. Oh, and the time change.
Oh, gosh. Ontario is 3 hours ahead, I want to say.
Yes.
Yeah, time changes always hit me in the face so hard. It's always fine when I get there, but then when I come back, I'm just like, oh my gosh, nothing is right and it won't be right for like a month. Are you adjusting okay?
I've adjusted just fine. I came back on Friday, so I've had some time to kind of feel fine. I don't think I ever adjusted to their time zone, so it was really easy for me to kind of get back into ours, but I left when there was good weather, and I came back to rainy weather, and it hasn't stopped since.
That's so typical Vancouver.
Exactly, exactly. This is Vancouver.
So the stage Bill C-22 is in right now, is it has just finished its first hearing, and it's waiting for its second. And like Margot mentioned, it has been pushed back a few times just to be approved. Where do you, as someone who is pretty deeply involved in the cause, kind of see the trajectory of Bill C-22 going?
Very, very slow. So I actually just saw a tweet from Bonita Zarillo, and she put, unacceptable that there is no clear commitments from the Liberals on when people can expect.
Oh. We are having technical difficulties. Our dear sweet Margo is currently paused on Zoom because of my Wi-Fi connection. How silly. We are just going to go to Radio DJ for a hot second here.
Interested in radio? Passionate about gender issues? Want to be an active part of your community? Then join the wave and become part of CITR's Gender Empowerment Collective. Our show Intersections is every 4 weeks, and we want your voice. We are all about empowering everyone and giving you the chance to speak your mind. There's no experience necessary. Find us on Instagram, Twitter, or email us at gender...
Hi again, Margo. So sorry about that. Just a little bit of technical difficulty with connection. Would you like to kind of jump back into what you were saying?
Yeah, so you were asking about the... And Bonita Zerillo, the MLA for Moody Coquitlam with NDP, has said that it's unacceptable that there is still no clear commitments from the Liberals on when people can expect to receive the Canada Disability Benefit. So unfortunately, they want it by 2023, which is coming up pretty quickly, but we're hearing 2024, but we're also hearing that people don't really know. And it's kind of very insensitive to make people who have been waiting for so long, with the growing inflation rates and everything like that, for us to have to wait even longer.
Yeah, it's just really a matter of, this is not really something that you can spend 2 to 3 years waiting for. It's very much so an immediate need. And there's also no, like, immediate action to, like, find a quote-unquote temporary solution while waiting for a more long-term solution.
So absolutely.
I completely agree with the insensitive portion.
It is. And we also know that places that are privately run, or even, like, publicly run, you know, we're talking about, like, the food banks and stuff like that. We know that places like that have shortages. And we know that that's only meeting one need when it comes to, like, poverty and disability and stuff like that. That's one need. And that's reliant mostly on the public to help. So we have so many gaps in terms of helping people who are disabled or in need. And it's like, why do they hurry up other things? You know, why do they put such urgency on MAID or such urgency on CERB? And then stuff like this, they think that we need to wait for it, that's okay. Like, it just, they need to really work on prioritizing, and they really need to work on expediting, because we just can't wait any longer.
Yeah, the answer feels very clear. What needs to happen feels clear. What needs to be prioritized feels obvious. And it totally does raise the questions of, why are priorities skewed? Like, what matters to the government most? And why are things like MAID being prioritized when they should be second options or, like, really last-ditch resorts instead of prioritizing just long-term benefit?
And I feel like the government is sending a very clear message by doing that they would rather, you know, push something like MAID, or at least have that more readily available, than funding for people to be able to support themselves. It's not like the money is being asked for to do extravagant things. It's literally being asked for so that we can have a livable wage or a livable amount. And many of us have, you know, certain medications that are just so expensive that are not covered. And that's where I feel like a lot of that additional money would go, is to make it so that we don't have to choose between, you know, like, rent and food and medication, that we can actually somehow maybe make that load a little bit lighter and not so heavy on our pockets.
Yeah, I completely agree, especially when the insurance system right now in Canada is kind of, you gain insurance by whatever job you have. And for those with disabilities that cannot work or are limited to certain jobs, that option to be able to pay for medications, or at least cover portions of medications, has been completely eradicated.
Absolutely. And if we're thinking about that, like, it's wild to me. I needed a specific medication for something, and it was somewhere between $160 to $240 for, like, a tube of cream for my rosacea. And my rosacea causes me physical pain. But because the government sees it as something cosmetic, it's not covered. And there's other things like that, I'm sure, where they see it as a cosmetic thing, or they just don't think that it's a necessary thing to cover. And many of us who are disabled just cannot work a 9-to-5, or we can't work for somebody else. Many of us are unable to work in general, or would like to work for ourselves. And that's not even supported very well by the government. If you want to get a job and be hired by somebody else, that's where the government puts their funding, is in the hands of people who will hire you. But if you want to work for yourself, that money is basically not there. So there's not a whole lot in terms of, like, accommodations, I feel, for folks, you know, like myself, who may have sensory problems or other issues where it just makes it impossible for us to work outside our home.
I totally agree. I feel like talking to you, I'm really getting a sense of understanding the scope of what people see and how people are supported is really just a mainstream, and the people that are outside of the norm and outside of the binary are really they're not considered, or they're, like, being failed and they're being discounted, or they're just not even being looked at.
Absolutely. Many of us are completely pushed by the wayside. And I always make a point of saying, you know, there are some of us who have limited energy and can't fight for these. And then there's some of us who may have that limited energy or more energy who can be the voices for all those other people. Like, we are doing this not just for ourselves, but there's so many other people that when I went to speak that I was representing, or whenever I do my activism or advocacy work, there's so many people in my mind that I know and probably don't know who I'm speaking for. And unfortunately, we can't rely on anybody else to be our voice, because a lot of the time when we're talking about disability and we're talking about our rights and employment and everything like that, there's not always a very positive motivation behind that. Sometimes the motivation is greed and money for some of us, for some organizations who make money off of us, unfortunately. So we really have to stand up for ourselves, because nobody else is going to do it.
Yeah. We are going to go to a super quick break right here, but when we come back, Margot and I are going to talk about parts of Bill C-22 that we think are really great and parts of Bill C-22 that probably should be more critically considered. So we will return in just a hot second.
For your oral listening pleasure, please join me, Marguerite, Sundays at 9 a.m. for Classical Chaos, classical music from around the world, right here on CITR 101.9 FM, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. We'll see you then.
The AMS Sexual Assault Support Centre, the SASC, is a free and confidential service which provides support to those who experience sexual assault, intimate partner violence, and harassment. We provide services to folks of all genders, including students, staff, faculty, and those who have a connection to the UBC Vancouver campus. We provide crisis and short-term emotional support, legal, medical, and campus-related advocacy, and outreach and educational programs. We are located in the Student Nest, room 3130. For more information on our hours of operation and other resources and services, please go to our website, amssasc.ca, or visit our Facebook page, AMS Sexual Assault Support Centre.
Hi again, I'm Nicole. And you are listening to All Access Pass, brought to you by CITR 101.9 FM. Hi again, Margot. Hello.
Hi.
So this last little bit of our show, we're just going to wrap up and talk about what we think Bill C-22 is doing right and what Bill C-22 needs to work on. So I really love that they are adding this compassionate standpoint of nothing without us, about us. I think that is a really integral, important part of Bill C-22.
Absolutely. It's actually nothing about us without us.
Nothing about us without us. Oh my gosh.
Yes. It's okay.
Yeah, so nothing about us without us. And I also really appreciate that they are adding this component of receiving compassionate responses from those that are going to be most affected by Bill C-22. I think that is truly the game changer, instead of just making decisions for these communities that will be affected most without even talking to them or considering them. I think that is so important.
I agree, because we are so often left out. I can't tell you how many, at least privately run organizations, don't really want to listen to disabled people. They think they know best. And then when you try to interject anything, they're very unlikely to listen. So let's hope that our government isn't just doing this for show, that they're really going to take these responses to heart and do something about it.
So Bill C-22 has some really amazing core components that I think really make it stand out from just talk. But I really want to see them walk the walk. And in order to do that, I have a lot of questions. And that kind of includes, like, I feel like what they're presenting for Bill C-22 is super vague. And I want some more specifics. Like, I want to know what exactly is Bill C-22 promising? Because right now it's kind of just saying, we will acknowledge and address financial and social barriers that people with disabilities are facing. Which is great, but are we accounting for the fact that inflation is ever growing and that rent is super expensive and that medication is also super expensive and that people with disabilities have a super wide range of needs? And how is Bill C-22 going to address each and every person?
And that's the question, is how are they going to do that? I know I made a comment to Sabrina of Disability Without Poverty, at least I think it was to her, and I said, you know what, how are they going to do that? And also, how are they going to know who is going to be, like, the recipient of this? Because federally, there's the disability tax credit, which is incredibly hard to get. And then we have all our provincial disability programs like PWD here in BC. So I wonder, are they going to tap into all the different provincial disability like financial monthly plans that people are on and figure out that way the eligibility of people? Like, how are they going to determine that? Because a lot of the time the federal government is so disconnected from what the provincial governments are doing.
Yeah, that is a very interesting component that I think about. Like, is it going to be one of those situations where it's going to be tacked on top of the provincial? Like, is this also going to be something that you're going to have to individually apply for? And also, is this going to be made readily accessible to everybody with disabilities? Like, is it going to be a long, strenuous, stressful application process? Because I feel like that would just discourage people from applying for it.
And that's a big problem, is that a lot of the time these forms that we have to go through and we have to apply for are so inaccessible in terms of understanding the criteria for them, or knowing if you're properly applying, getting it done correctly, finding help. They make it more complicated than it needs to be. If they know somebody is receiving assistance for being disabled or having a disability, that should be enough. That should push it through. Because if we're going to spend all this time fighting for it and then have very little time or very little understanding of how to actually get it, you know, we would hope that as these things kind of go through, that they really consider how to make that more accessible. Because as it stands, the government does a pretty bad job of making it easy for us to fill out forms.
Yeah, and kind of like what I touched on earlier, there's a lot of talk about how to be eligible for it, but not a whole lot of talk on what it actually is. And I am definitely very curious on to, as about, like, what are they going to promise? And you're absolutely correct. Like, how are they going to make this entire process accessible to everyone? Because I think it would just be so ironic if this was a bill that was meant to address accessibility that wasn't actually super accessible. Do you have any thoughts on how making this bill and what they're fighting for more easily accessible to people to apply for?
They need to broaden the age range, because if it truly is that anybody over 65 can't get it, that's not okay. Because, you know, for the most part, being disabled doesn't just end. If anything, it usually gets worse, especially with aging. So I just really hope that they listen and that they broaden the scope of who can get it, and that they just find out a way to, again, if you're on a pre-existing disability benefit, that they can make it so that you can get it. And I would just be hopeful for that, because it's just, honestly, the amount of forms I've had to fill out and the amount of even doctors that I've had to pay to fill out specific forms, they just make things a little bit too difficult. And I'm sure that's with purpose, because they don't just want anybody getting the benefit. They want people who qualify to get the benefit. But there should be enough, like, markers on your, like, MSP or whatever else that you're receiving that should tell the government, hey, I'm disabled, I need this benefit.
Yeah, I agree. I totally just think that in the spirit of accessibility, it requires a very compassionate response, which I think there have been some strides in terms of advocating for Bill C-22, but the actual practice requires that same compassionate response. And I think going forward, I definitely will be keeping my eye on Bill C-22, and I just really hope that they hold that compassionate response.
I agree. You know, it's kind of going along with that is, you know, sometimes when you call the government, they make it really, really difficult to talk to a person and to talk to a compassionate person because I'm sure our government workers are very overworked and very stressed. And, you know, I have compassion for them, but there also needs to be something in terms of how they treat people as well. Because I haven't been. I've been kind of talked down to when I try to, you know, communicate the needs, my accessibility needs, and you know, it's a very broad conversation to have is how does the government treat and feel about disabled people? I think that's kind of we're opening ourselves up to seeing what they're going to do and how they feel about us and how they're going to accommodate us and treat us like we are important parts of society.
For sure. I definitely agree that the way the government has approached the topic of disability has been incredibly disappointing. And I think Bill C-22 is an opportunity for the government to really just incorporate people with disabilities as part of the community in a larger way.
Absolutely. And I guess we'll see. I mean, they're giving themselves a lot of time, probably more time than necessary. But I hope that means that they're really gonna finesse this, and that they're gonna make sure that any cracks in the system are filled in and that it gets executed seamlessly. Like, we can just hope that that additional time is to make all of those things happen.
Yeah, I know that I'm personally pretty invested in Bill C-22. I'm really excited to see where it goes. Do you see yourself further advocating for Bill C-22 on a public
Absolutely. I
scale?
mean, anytime I have the chance to advocate for things that are really important to me in terms of just the work that I do, I'm going to do it. And with the nonprofit I'm with, BC People First, we do a lot of like online seminars and a lot of education and all kinds of stuff. And it is a disability run organization, which is amazing. Unfortunately, a lot of us get overlooked because we are grassroots efforts. So many of us are out there really doing the work and really having these conversations. And I just hope that people not only learn from the politicians that are pushing this bill, but also from individuals who are the ones that are fighting for this and need it the most.
Yeah, I really encourage anyone who feels comfortable doing so and may potentially be affected by Bill C-22 to go to the House of Commons website and put something out there because I do think it would make a world of difference having real life experiences be sent to the higher ups. Thank you so much for coming on today, Margot, and talking about your experience. It's been unbelievably inspirational to hear about all the work you do, not just for Bill C-22, but just for peoples with disabilities within BC. I am so sure that I will come across your name in the near future.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate this opportunity to speak, and it's just been great. So thank you.
Yeah, we are going to call this episode a wrap, but I hope everyone keeps their eyes and ears open for Bill C-22 and keeps fighting the good fight, just like Margot. Thanks for listening to All Access Pass. We'll see you next week, Thursday, 6 to 7 p.m.